The following sermon is from Faith Bible Church in Spokane, Washington. Visit fbchurch.org/sermons for more.
Have you ever been in the dark and you were scared and lost a little bit, confused? Turn to your neighbor and tell them about the scariest, worst time you were ever in the dark. Maybe you're hiking, maybe in your house. So think of your worst experience in the dark and tell your neighbor. Go. All right, so you guys have some stories about being in the dark? Wow, it's really bad. I got some feedback. There we go. So, it's not very fun to be in the dark and not know where you're going. One time I was hiking in Tenerife, and it was dark, and we went like 3 or 4 miles too far out of the way, and it was like a night hike where we were hiking from the ocean to the top of the volcano. So it was already going to be like a 20-mile hike. We made it longer by going 3 or 4 miles out of the way, because we were in the dark. It's not fun when you're in the dark and you don't know where you're going. Sometimes I've been in the dark before and I've kicked my shin on something or I've stubbed my toe. That's not very fun. It's not fun when you really don't know what's going on and you're in the dark. Have you ever been scared in the dark? Like, what monster's lurking around the corner? Maybe there's really nothing. It's not very rational, but because it's super dark, you don't know what's going to happen. And it kind of feels like this is not good. Like, if you're home by yourself, do you turn the lights on? Like, you don't want to be in the total dark, do you? Because it's kind of scary and awkward. So there's lots of reasons to not like the dark, but there's more than just being in the dark physically, right? What are some other kinds of dark that we experience? Think about math, for example. Some of you might be in the dark on math. It doesn't mean that you are literally in the dark, but you don't understand what's going on. You're confused. You don't see it clearly. It's not making a lot of sense to you. You're in the dark in math or biology or English. You're in the dark about what your teacher's looking for. You keep writing these essays. You don't know what your teacher is actually expecting. You're in the dark. Maybe you're in the dark in a relationship with someone. You think that you're doing what's going to make your friend happy, but really they keep getting angry at you. You're like, I'm in the dark. I don't get it. Why is this person not happy with what I'm doing? We can be in the dark on people. We don't understand what they're doing, why they're doing it. When you're in the dark, you make poor decisions. You try something because you think it's going to be helpful, and then it's not helpful. But darkness isn't just those kind of categories. There's also dark like Star Wars. Like, you guys remember in the third Star Wars when Anakin goes from the light side to the dark side in that terrible moment? You're like, no, he just went to the dark side. And you just see it. Like, he's ruining his entire existence. He's ruining everyone he loves. When you go to the dark, really stands for evil. It stands for not seeing things well. It stands for wickedness. It stands for misery and destruction and death that happens. That's why in the new heavens and the new earth, there's going to be no more night. There'll be no darkness in heaven, ultimately. When Christ comes back and he establishes his rule on the earth, the new heavens and the new earth, there'll be no darkness. He'll be the light. And you and I, we're in the dark spiritually before we meet Jesus. We are in the dark. And so this passage we're going to look at tonight, it's going to help us to see how we're in the dark before we meet Christ and then how we need to be looking to him and letting him be our light. Take, for example, if your friend is shopping for a car. Some of you have just turned 16. You maybe need a car. Say you're shopping for a car, you have $1,000 to spend, and your friend sees this amazing sports car. It's beautiful, it's got not many miles on it, and they're only asking $1,000 for it. And they call you on the phone, they're like, hey, you gotta get over here and buy this car right now. Bring your money, come get this car. And when they call you, you're like, nah, I don't believe you. I'm not gonna do that. I don't want it. And your friend's like, you gotta be kidding me. You must be out of your mind. You're not seeing what I'm seeing. You're in the dark on that car, right? If you actually saw it and you weren't in the dark on it, you'd be wanting to go get it. Or what if you're of that age where you're looking for that perfect spouse to spend your life with and your friend's like, I just met the person. They're so attractive. They're so godly. There's so many good qualities about them. And you're like, nah, not interested. And your friend's like, oh, they're in the dark. They don't get it. There's such a good thing here. And they don't even want to talk to them. They don't want to become friends. There's so many ways we can be in the dark and we can miss out on something that we're not seeing. So tonight we're going to look at Romans 1 and see that our dark thinking about God leads to dark desiring and leads to dark doing. So why are we talking about this? We need to understand what the bad news is so we can appreciate the good news. Like, if you have a great job and I come and tell you, hey, I have a job for you. You're like, thanks, but I already have a job. I don't need two. I'm busy enough as it is, right? But if you just lost your job and I say, I just heard about this great job, you'd appreciate that I found a job for you. Or if you're really healthy, like you're like running Ironman triathlons and like you're even healthier than Daniel Daugherty, you're just so healthy, then I tell you, I found some medicine for you to make you all better, you'd be like, no thanks. Extra antibiotics are bad for your system. I don't want to do that. But if you're really sick and I tell you, I just heard about this cool cure that will help you get better, you'd appreciate it. You need to understand the bad news so you can appreciate the good news. And so that's why we've been talking about how we were dead, how we were distant, and how we're in the dark. 2 weeks ago, we talked about we're dead. We're relationally dead away from God before we meet Christ. And when you're dead, you can't take yourself to the hospital. You can't get in the car and drive to the ER and say, hey, I'm dead. What's your problem? What seems to be the problem? I'm dead. They're like, no, you're not. You just drove yourself here. We're dead spiritually. We can't get to God. And last week, we looked at how we're distant. We can't do enough good things. We can't be better than someone else beside us. We can't meet these standards to get ourselves to God. We're distant from God. And we don't have a car. We don't have a rocket ship. You can't get in your favorite rocket ship and clap, clap, clap to get there. There's no way. You can't get to God from where you are. You just have to cry out to him for mercy. And that actually will get you to him. But we need to understand the bad news that we're dead, we're distant. And tonight we're going to see that we're in the dark. We do not see clearly who God is. And so we reject God. We replace God with other stuff. Like we just sang, this world has nothing for me. You're all I need. We actually are like, this world has everything for me. I don't even need you, God. I'm good. That's how we live our lives before we meet Christ. This world has everything for me. I don't need you, God. That's how we see God. We're in the dark. Now, a lot of you have met Christ, and maybe that's not how you think anymore, but we can easily go back to that thinking. And some of you are still thinking that way. So I want you to see this tonight, how futile, how worthless this way of thinking is. We're in the dark. We don't see things as they really are. We don't see according to reality. We think that something is real that's not real, and we think that something that is real is not real. We're in the dark, and we need the light. So look with me at Romans 1 if you have a Bible. It's like towards the last little bit there, after Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, Romans. Romans 1. And Paul is super stoked. He's the one writing this. He's so excited about some good news. And he's saying, I'm eager to tell you this good news. I'm really eager. Have you ever been eager for something before? Like eager for summer break. Eager for those testings to stop. Eager for your vacation with your family and for catching big fish or whatever. We can be eager for things. Paul's eager to preach the gospel to these people that he hasn't even met yet in Rome. And he says in verse 16 of chapter 1, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. This is not something I'm going to not talk about. I'm super excited about this good news because it's the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. He's saying this is the power of God to rescue you from being in the dark, from being distant, from being dead. And he says it's to everyone who believes. For in it, the righteousness of God is revealed. God shows us like the unveiling of a new movie when the next movie comes out and it's unveiled and you get to go hang out with Campbell and watch it. He unveils his righteousness, how you can be right with God through faith. But then he goes back and explains why they needed to be made right with God. What was their problem? What was the issue that they were struggling with that made them need to be rescued? And then this is where we get into our text, verse 18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. They suppress it. For what can be known about God is plain to them because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world and the things that have been made, so they are without excuse. So Paul starts out saying the wrath of God is revealed. God is a God of wrath. Why? Because he's good and he's loving. He's not going to let evil destroy his people or his good creation that he's made. He's going to put an end to sin and to evil so that there can be his goodness reigning forever. In this passage, the wrath of God, it's his strong anger and indignation at sin. And it's going to be expressed in him paying them back with something. What does he do? How does he pay the people back for what they deserve? In this passage, he does that by giving them over to what they want. He surrenders them over to their desires. They have dark thinking, and he gives them over to their dark desiring that goes along with their dark thinking. That's his wrath that's unveiled from heaven against their dark thinking. And eventually, this wrath is going to be unveiled and them being in the lake of fire away from God forever. But Paul's heart is that as he explains this, they would be thankful and remember where they came from and that we would not be in the lake of fire in the end. So what is God's wrath revealed against? What is God indignant about? What is he not happy about? It says here that he's not happy about ungodliness and unrighteousness. So what is ungodliness? Is that like when you wear pants that are too baggy and Jimmy John's is not happy with you? Because Jimmy John says if you let your kids wear baggy pants, they're not going to be very happy. That's what causes that. You got to give them lots of Jimmy Johns and let them wear baggy pants. Is that what causes people to be ungodly? Is it having piercings and tattoos? Not necessarily. Being ungodly is being irreverent towards God. It's having an irreverent attitude where you reject God. You're like, I don't need you. It's disrespecting God. Have you ever had a teacher that was kind of a pushover that didn't know how to maintain classroom management and really respect in the class? They were like me. They were too soft and too nice, and people didn't respect them. If you've had a teacher like that, that's what this is talking about. Treating God that way. Being irreverent towards God. And that results in the second thing, which is unrighteousness, where we reject God's commands. We don't obey God's law. We don't love God. We don't love people. And that is what we do because we don't fear him. We don't respect him. We don't see him the way we should see him. We're in the dark on who God is. We think we can just disrespect God, disregard God, and it doesn't matter. This is how all of us thought before we met Christ. We were in the dark. So we violate God's rule. And with our violating God's rules, we enter into dark thinking. We join the dark side. We suppress this truth. We stifle it. We deny it. We choke the truth of who God is out. We don't change that God is, but we, with our actions, are acting like God is not there. Have you ever been sinning and you just kind of had it in your mind to block out the fact that God exists? Like, I can't do this right now and be thinking about that the God of the universe is watching me, that he's with me. I can't do it. It's not going to work. So then you just have to ignore God and go ahead with your sin, whatever it is. That's how we act functionally. And maybe we don't even have to block God out. We've already blocked him out so far. That's what they do with our unrighteousness. We are denying that there's a God. So what is this truth that we deny with our dark thinking? What is it that we're suppressing? We see here in the verse here that God's invisible attributes, what's true about God is plain to everybody. He's shown it to him. God's shown everybody who he is, that he's God. How has he done that? He's shown him through his creation. He's shown his eternal power and his divine nature through his creation. And so what we're doing when we practice unrighteousness is we're saying, I don't need you, God. You're saying this world has everything and I don't need you. It's like the guy on Mars, you know, remember the Martian? It's like he's dependent on his little life suit with the oxygen and stuff. It's like if he picked up a rock from Mars and was like, this rock is everything. It's giving me my life. I don't need this life, this suit. And he takes it off. Well, he never would have made it back to Earth, right? He would have just died from suffocating and not being able to survive in a harsh environment. If you're thinking that something else besides God sustains you, if there's something else besides God that causes us to exist, that's this thinking. It's dark thinking. Thinking that we don't need God, that something else besides him is good enough for us to make us happy, to fulfill us, to give us peace, to give us happiness. How long in reality could we last without God, the creator? How long could we be alive? If God stopped sustaining me, I'd drop dead right away. You do too. It doesn't matter whether you believe in God or not. He's the one keeping you alive. How about the joy in your heart? Can you actually be joyful and content without God? You can't. God made us to know him. If without him, we can't be joyful or filled with his peace or his strength. It's madness to think that we don't need God. It's like being on Mars and saying, I don't need my oxygen tank. I don't need my space suit. I'm good. I got this. It's craziness. That's dark thinking. It's daft thinking. It's dim thinking. It's not true. We're suppressing the truth about God. So what are these invisible attributes? Well, the first one is eternal power. It's infinite, timeless power. You look at the Grand Canyon, for example, or anything that God made. You see that there's this infinite power that made everything. It's a power that didn't have a beginning, that doesn't have an end. It's power that has no limit. He can sustain over 7 billion people at the same time. He can hold all of us together so that our bodies don't fly apart, so that the atoms inside of us don't fly apart, don't lose their hold with the electrons and protons and neutrons and just everything just flies apart. He holds the universe together, billions of stars and planets. He holds them all together. His eternal power is evident in everything that he made. You see the galaxy, you see the universe, all the stars. There's no way that could just by chance happen. There has to be eternal power holding all that together and creating that, something greater than that. When you see something, some power greater than that had to have caused that to come into existence and caused that to continue. It can't continue itself. It has to be brought into being by something else. You can't have nothing and then something comes from that. Something had to be before the nothing. So there's the universe now. When there wasn't the universe, something had to be there before that so that the universe could be made, and that's God. His eternal power makes everything. And there's his divine nature. You look at all this stuff and you see that there's one who's not dependent on the creation. Someone has to be outside of it. That's divine by definition. God, or the gods like the Greeks thought about it, someone outside of the creation who's not limited to the creation, who's not dependent on the creation, his divine nature is evident. If you see a watch laying on the beach, do you just assume that some metal from a scrapyard put itself together and made a watch? No, someone smarter than the watch, more powerful than the watch, had to put it together. You see your phone? Your phone can't just happen on its own. Someone had to design that phone. Some people in South Korea put this together and made it the way it is. That's why it's so awesome and it works great. It's a great little tool, and people smarter than the phone, more powerful than the phone, had to put it together and make it. So this is the same thing with the earth. When you look at the earth, someone greater had to have made all this. And we're in the dark. We reject that. Think about a baby like Noelle when she was in Caitlin's womb. You can't see that little baby growing in there and think, oh, that just happened on accident. Millions of DNA and chromosomes, all that coming together. And there's so many things that can go wrong. When Julie was pregnant with our kids, it was nerve-wracking. I was like, when Lucas was inside him, like, what's going to happen? What if his heart doesn't come together the right way? What if his ear ends up over here? What if his legs are on backwards? I mean, there's all these things that can go wrong. Not those things, really, but other things can go wrong. It's scary. God's the creator putting all that together. He's divine. His divine nature is seen in all those things. Someone greater than us designed us and put us together. So all this is evident through everything that God made. So it says, it's clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world and the things that have been made, so they're without excuse. We can see it. God's made it abundantly clear that he is God, that there is a God. But we suppress this truth that there's a God. That's dark. It doesn't make sense. It's what every human being does since Adam and Eve. We act like we don't need God. God's not there. We see all this stuff that God made, and it's evident that there's a God who made that. But we commit the madness, the craziness of saying, we don't need him. We're good. We're going to rule the universe ourselves. We could do a better job ruling the universe than the creator could. We're going to do this on our own. We don't see how foolish what we're doing is, but we're without excuse. And not only that, he's written in our hearts his law. So we should see this God and want to keep his law, which is written in our hearts. Like, you don't have to teach people that they shouldn't steal from each other. Every culture has some idea of what stealing is. Cultures have idea of what morality is because God's put it in our hearts, our conscience. We sear it, we ignore it, we can go away from it, but we know what right and wrong is, and we reject that because we reject God. Everyone's guilty of that. We're dark in our thinking. It says, for although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him. But they became futile in their thinking. Their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. This is our indictment. In our dark thinking before we met Christ, even though we knew God, we perceived God, we didn't honor him as God or give thanks to him. Every single person who's lived has seen all the things God made, and we should, from that, have said, we want to honor you, God. We want to give you thanks. But instead, we become useless in our thinking. We think, let's honor the things that he made instead. It's like if your parents give you all these really cool things, and instead of loving your parents, you love the stuff they gave you. Instead of obeying your parents, you start obeying the phone they gave you and the car they gave you and whatever else. It doesn't even make sense. You need to love your parents. And so God gives us all this stuff, and we, instead of loving him, we become dark in our thinking, we reject God, and we want to do our own stuff. So we're perceiving God, but we don't honor God or glorify God. We don't give thanks to God. We refuse to honor and glorify him and thank him. Instead of thanking God for making stuff, we want to just find our life in those things that God made. Instead of living to praise God, we want to live for other people to praise us. We exchange God for all this stuff that he made. And so we live in this dark thinking, this dark thing where we're rejecting God. Instead of worshiping him, we start worshiping other stuff. There's this vacuum. He made us to worship, so we can't not worship something. We have to give thanks to something. We have to look to something. And so we look to what God made instead of God. The last part of the verse there, claiming to be wise, they became fools. We think we're really smart as human beings. We think that we don't need God, that there isn't a God. And then we reject him and look to what he's made instead to give us life. It's absolutely useless, worthless, futile thinking. Our wanting and our wills become totally darkened, dumb, dim. In our hearts, we exchange the glory of God for the things he made. It's the dumbest exchange ever. It's like if Randy has $1 million and he trades it for some Monopoly money. Would that be smart for Randy to do? No, he should keep the $1 million, right? It's a dumb exchange. If you have an amazing Camaro that's red and drives really fast and you trade it for like a clunker from the junkyard that doesn't even run, that doesn't even have an engine in it, would that be a good trade? If you had this amazing spouse, husband or wife, and you trade them for just being miserable the rest of your life, would that be a good trade? No. We make this trade of trading the creator who's amazing in his glory and perfect and who can fill us with himself, and we trade him for something else namely the stuff that he made. It's like worshiping the pot instead of the potter. We like the pot that the potter made. We don't like the potter, though. I'm not talking about the kind of pot they sell in Spokane. I'm talking about the kind of pot that you like put plants in. We worship the pot instead of the potter. It's like loving the food instead of the cook. You take this food and you're so happy with the food, but not the cook. It's like loving the song, but not the singer. We reject the one who deserves all the credit, and we ignore him, and we give the credit to something else. It's the worst rejection, replacement, crime that's ever been committed in all of human history. Trading God for other stuff. And then we think, I can just be okay on my own. I'm going to look to this person who's my friend, and they'll fill me instead of God. I look to my job to fill me instead of God. I look to my future instead of God. We look to all these other things. We look to ourselves. I act like it all the time. I wake up and think, I can do this. I don't say that, but I act like that because I don't go to God and depend on him. So we're dark in our thinking. We trade God for other stuff. So how do you think about God? Are you in the dark? Are you rejecting God and replacing him with something else? Do you treat God irreverently? Do you break God's law because you don't really think he's good or worth obeying? What you think about God is the most important thing about you. What do you think about God? Who is God to you? It doesn't really matter who he is to you, but who is God and what do you understand about him? He is who he is, whether you believe it or not. Who is God? Is he worth loving and obeying? Is he worth seeking? Does he make you want to get up and get to know him better and obey him? If not, we're in the dark because he really is amazing. We're rejecting the reality of who God is and we're going after something that's not true. What earthly things do you worship and serve instead of God? That's how we can tell we're in the dark about who God is, because we go after other stuff instead of him. But that's our human condition. You're not alone if you're struggling with being in the dark. Every single human being that's ever lived has started out living in the dark about who God is. And we need light. We need light from God. We'll talk about how we get light. This darkness in our thinking leads to dark desiring. Look at verse 24. Therefore, God gave them up in the lusts of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the creator, who's blessed forever. Amen. So God handed them over. He surrendered them to dishonorable and pure desires. So it makes sense. When your thinking is dark and you leave reality with your thinking, then you leave reality with your wanting. You start wanting stuff that's not going to help you. If you start thinking that this rock is what really feeds me, not the bread, then you're going to want to start eating the rock, even though it's going to break your teeth and not really feed you. You start thinking that you can live based on something else besides God, you're going to start wanting that thing instead of God. So our desires get perverted. They get changed because of our dark thinking. And so we start wanting stuff that's going to actually hurt us. And God gives us over to that. He doesn't make us want those things, but he delivers us over. He hands us over. He says, okay, you're rejecting me and replacing me. I'm going to give you over to these desires that you have. I'm going to stop restraining you. It's like he was restraining us, holding us back, and he just stops. He just lets us go into that. Look at verse 26. We see one way that gets expressed in dark desiring. For this reason, God gave them up to dishonorable passions. For their women exchanged natural relations for those that are contrary to nature. And the men likewise gave up natural relations with women and were consumed with passion for one another. Men committing shameless acts with men and receiving in themselves the due penalty for their error. So we see here God gave humanity over to dark passions. Here in these verses, it's expressed sexually. So there's sexual desires that are broken, that are not what God designed. And that's because we've rejected God in our thinking, and so our desiring gets darkened. We start desiring things that aren't good for us, that aren't what God designed. And then you see the next verse, it doesn't just in those dark desiring and that sexually, it's also in desiring all kinds of other evil things. So look at verse 28. And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, and malice. Have you ever had something that was worthless, that was good for nothing? You ever had like a tool and it wouldn't do what you wanted it to do, and you're like, this tool is worthless. It's no good. It doesn't do anything. Or you had like a computer that wouldn't work or a phone that wouldn't work, and you're like, this is worthless. God's saying here, he gave us over to a worthless mind, a way of thinking that's worthless. It's not worth anything. It doesn't help us. It doesn't provide us with anything. No good thing comes from it. And that's what happens as a result of our dark thinking. We get these dark desires that leads to dark deciding, dark doing. It says they are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They're gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless. Though they know God's righteous decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, they not only do them, but give approval to those who practice them. when we're in the dark and are doing, and I hope that you see that on this list are things all of us are guilty of. I'm guilty of these things. You're guilty of these things. We want other people to do the same things because, like, I feel better. If I'm in the dark doing these things, I want other people to do them too. And like, yeah, you're doing it too. Yay, we're all together in this. It makes you feel happy that you're together with other people. And so you want everyone else to validate what you're doing so that you feel like it's okay. So not only should they accept it, they also have to like applaud it and think it's awesome. Otherwise, that's hateful. That's what we do because of our dark thinking. So what's the point? We're in the dark. Like a bunch of cockroaches in a box. When you shine the light on the cockroaches, what do? In Nicaragua, when I lived there, that we lived in this big house, there was lots of cockroaches. They were nasty and big and juicy. And it was gross to kill them. When you went in the kitchen where they were all eating on the counters off the food, you turn the lights on and they would all scatter. They didn't like the light. We're like cockroaches. We don't understand. The light gets shined and we like run away from it. We don't want the light. We're in the dark. We like our dark thinking and our dark deeds and our dark desiring. So how do we fix this? What does our dark desiring and our dark doing come from? Can you just stop wanting things the wrong way sexually? Can you just stop doing all those things that verse 28 to 32 listed, like disobeying your parents, being a gossip, being disrespectful, not loving God the way we should? We can't just stop doing those things because the root of it, the cause of it is thinking wrongly about God. We reject God, we replace God, then we want all these things that are bad for us. So you can't just stop wanting bad things and stop doing bad things. You have to start with your thinking, right? How can you correct your thinking about God so that you don't reject God and see God rightly? How can you really come to the light and not be in the dark? The only way is through the gospel. You have to see that Jesus, who came to earth as a human being and lived a perfect life and died in your place and rose again from the dead and is coming back to rule on the earth. You have to see Jesus. He shows you the light and helps you to come to the light. He brings you to the light. You can't get out of the dark any other way other than looking at Jesus. How often does your thinking about God need to be refreshed? We all need to have our thinking refreshed daily. Why do we start wanting the wrong thing? Why do we start fighting with people? Why do we start struggling with our desires and our doing? Because our thinking about God gets all wonky. You have to keep your thinking about God straight on with the truth of who God is and what he says in the Bible so that you can then want what's right and do what's right. So I encourage you, don't just try to fix your doing and desiring. Look at Christ and let him fix your thinking so that you can then do the right thing. Like the biblical counseling people say, you do what you do because you want what you want, right? And you want what you want because you think what you think. Your thinking ultimately is the root of what you want, which makes you do what you do. So fix your thinking by looking at Jesus so you can then want what's right. Are you in the dark? Have your desires and deeds been affected by your dark thinking? Do you perceive God's invisible attributes in the things that you can see around you? What would it look like for you to honor God and give thanks to him? I want you to think about in your small groups what it means to be in the dark, how you see that expressed in your life. How do you go to the light? If you feel like you're still in the dark right now, talk about who Jesus is. People talk about who Jesus is with you in your group so you can hear about that and really be pointed towards him and towards the light. So let me pray for you and then let's break up into our small groups. God, thank you that you are the light and in you there's no darkness. Thank you, Jesus, that you're the light of the world and you came and you overcome the darkness. The darkness cannot overcome you. And I ask you to help me to think on truth, to really be in the light with my thinking, to confess my sins, to look at you, Jesus, to know that you're the one who really can satisfy me and fill me, that this world does have nothing for me, that you're everything I need. God, I confess that many times I act like the world has everything and I don't need you. So please help us to change in our thinking by looking at you, Jesus, in the gospel. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this sermon audio from Faith Bible Church. Feel free to share. We only ask that you do not alter the content in any way and that you do not charge for it. Visit us online at fbchurch.org for more sermons, articles, and other resources, as well as information about our ministries.